Information you can trust, stories you can relate to, and tips and tactics you can apply on your next adventure. Hunting, fishing, camping, and everything in between. This is the Battle Mountain Podcast. Welcome everyone to the Battle Mountain Podcast. In this episode, I have a friend of mine, Lance Foster, and it's Lance and I actually met. Lance won a hunt through pro membership sweepstakes with Mike Deming, which is, if you guys haven't checked that out, you should definitely check out that opportunity. And I ended up filming Lance on a mule deer hunt that he won in Utah. So Lance, it's great to have you on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, man, it's been a minute, but great. I appreciate when you contacted me to come on. I'm more than honored to be on here, for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. I learned a lot from, you know, filming you, you know, learning about some glassing techniques and different shooting techniques and just talking hunting with you. I learned a lot. And I know that, you know, hunting is kind of a way of life for you, but I also know that recently, or I guess I don't know how recently, but you used to be a guide and you kind of hung that up so you could get back to just enjoying hunting for hunting.
That's exactly why I did it. I thought that hunting is my life. It's my passion. It's my life. I grew up doing it, especially mule deer. I mean, that's my ultimate passion, what we got to enjoy our hunt together on. And me and a partner got together and decided to start our own outfitting company a few years back. Did it for 5 years, I believe. 5 or 6 years I did it for. Successfully. Had a heck of a good operation. More and more I got into it, it started turning hunting into a job. I started getting anxiety on the hunts. And I got a lot of pressure. You know, you have your clients coming in, big money, spend a lot of money. They've burned a lot of points on their tag and are relying on you to do it, which I love that and love the reward of it. However, I wasn't getting to hunt for myself hardly at all. And the most important thing, I was not getting to hunt with my children. And as you know, we shared many times, you and I share a common bond with that. Yeah. Our children are our lives. And those times in the hills that I had with my grandfather, the memories I have with him hunting, I could never, they're irreplaceable.
Right.
And I got to stop making those memories for a few years with my kids. And I decided one day, the last elk hunt of the year we had, 2 years ago, we had a very successful elk hunt, killed a tremendous bull. I got back to camp and we were cleaning up camp. And I told my partner at that point in time, I was finished. Just on a whim, told him I was finished. And the last 2 years have been two of the best hunting years I've ever had in my life. And not in what I've killed or the size of animal I've killed, but I've got to spend time back in the hills with my family again and build those memories. And I'm telling you, I miss the money, but I don't even think about it during that time of year when I'm out there. So
yeah,
best decision I ever made in my life was honestly to quit outfitting. And it's for some, but it's not for everyone.
Right.
And I'll reassure you, I will never do it a day in my life again. I'm going to keep hunting a personal and a family aspect and not a money thing for me.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that brings up so many subjects, right? Because you hear the, you know, money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a real nice boat. You know, you hear all that kind of stuff. And like one that always stuck in my mind was, you know, money isn't everything, but it ranks right up there with oxygen. And you know, money is not something that I don't want to look back on my life and be like, yep, I made $1 million. What I want to be able to do I have a goal to make that kind of money? Yes, absolutely. But it's more for the fact of what I can do with that moving forward. So in my mind, you know, having that kind of money, the only reason I want to do it or, you know, eventually is so that I can be able to do things with my kids that we will be able to remember forever. And I'm not saying that it's going to take millions, But with that, I also want to be able to give opportunities to people that can't make those opportunities themselves.
Absolutely, man. That's many of the reasons you and I clicked right off the bat on the hunt that we went on together.
Yeah.
Very common interest, man. And that's, you just spoke words right out of my mouth for sure.
Yeah. I mean, because if I can build something that allows me the money, well, most importantly, allows me the time to enjoy my kids, because much like you, that comes first. But if I can then do that and then have the money to be able to create opportunities and things like that for other people and watch them light up when they, I don't know, shoot a pheasant. I don't know, shoot a big deer. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe they light up when they get to go take their kid to Disneyland. I don't know what their dream is, but if I can help them make that happen, like, how cool, you know?
It would be, for sure.
So, but yeah, I can 100% agree with you, where when something that you love starts turning into a job that you're being stressed about, that thing you love, no longer, you don't love it that much anymore.
it's so true. And I had a couple friends warn me of that before I went into outfitting.
Yep.
They said that. They said, don't ever turn something you love into a career or a job, because it'll just become just that. You know, I shrugged it off like, nah, whatever. You guys don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing better in the world than hunting and making money doing it, in my mind at that time. And it was a great 5-6 years. I wouldn't turn back and change it for nothing. I got the experience. I got to, as you just spoke, got to see that smile and that light on many clients' faces when they took that trophy. But I would never go back and do it again either.
Right.
It was a good thing to have done and experienced, and move on to bigger and better ventures.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to hunting with your kids, that, again, that's something you and I are very, very, we're fortunate to be able to do it. Absolutely. But we're very alike, and that's so important to us. I think there's probably a large majority of people that either don't feel confident with taking their kids out, or not sure that their kids can handle it maybe, or something along those lines. And what are some things that you do to ensure that your kids are, you know, able to handle it and have fun, and that way you guys go out and you create lasting memories rather than memories and ideas that they don't want to do it ever again?
Yeah. Great question, man. First of all, it's all about the preparation going up into it. Whatever weapon you choose to hunt with, they've got to be extremely confident in it. They've got to want to do it and have a passion and enjoy it. And that's being comfortable with the weapon. My kids, I always teach, whether it's, as you know, I'm a huge sports guy too, coaching, things like that. I don't ever want something to come easy for my kids.
Right.
I believe we appreciate, and the better things are those things that you work hard for, and, mm-hmm. and you have to earn. And that is hunting. Anybody that's hunted, like you just said, I don't care if it's from a pheasant to a bull elk, mule deer, whatever. It's hard. It's enduring. Yep. You have to do those things. And those are what I like. It's especially those most physical hunts. My son drew a elk tag here in Utah this year, and it was a difficult hunt. I mean, seeing no elk at all for the first 7, 8, 9 days to finally locating them, turning them up. And then when you are successful in those moments that you took so much preparation to do, and it didn't come easy, that's when the gratification kicks in. That's when the buck fever kicks in, after the animal's down and the kids get the shakes. And there is nothing more rewarding in my mind than seeing my kids happy, seeing them proud of themselves. And that's why I do it. And so it's just leading up to those things, you know. They grew up. My kids probably don't know any different than hunting season. They don't know any different than they're not going to hunt. I remember the first year my daughter, she's an animal lover. I mean, absolutely loves every animal on the planet. And I remember the day before her first deer hunt, she said that to me. She said, Dad, what if I don't want to kill the buck. And I told her, my daughter's name's Chevelle. I said, Chevelle, if we get the opportunity at this deer and you pull up and you put him in your scope and you do not want to shoot, I says, don't you dare shoot.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. If that's you, and you can turn to me and say, Dad, I don't want to shoot. I said, I will be as proud of you, if not maybe more proud of you for saying that and believing in what you truly want than I would if you harvested that buck. Needless to say, first big buck she got in her scope, she pulled the trigger and she's absolutely
hammered it.
Addicted now. Yeah, she's every year that's all she wants to do is hunt now. So, but good for her, you know. And you just the game of do not force them. Let them pick what they want to do, and then give them all the opportunities in the world to be successful at that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, too, it's like the amount of, you know, how you mentioned, the amount of things that being on a hunt, especially on public land, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't hunt private land or high fence. I don't care how you hunt. As long as you're doing it legally, I don't care. But it's no one can argue that a public land hunt is more difficult. That's public. No. That's absolutely how it is, you know? Yeah. And, man, the stuff that your child can learn when you're out there is just, yeah, I don't know where else things like that can be taught.
It's tough to think in my mind of where else they can gather all that in one element.
Yeah.
Like you can in the hunting out in the field. It's pretty amazing, and I think that's why we do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, too, I think the not only the lessons that you can learn, but the challenge that each scenario poses, because they're all different.
You know, they certainly are.
You know?
You think you've experienced it all, and then the next hunt comes along, and you have not.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Or you go on a stalk, and you blow it up in your face, and you're like, okay, well, you know, this time I'm going to for sure get this buck killed because I'm going to do this different, and then it blows up in your face again.
It's very humbling most of the time, that's for sure.
Oh, man. So, you know, you got to go on a couple hunts this year with your kids. Out of those hunts, does one stick out in your mind that was more memorable than the others?
My son's elk hunt this year. It really was. He drew a limited entry tag here in the state of Utah. It's called a HAMS tag. So HAM stands for handgun, archery, muzzleloader, or shotgun.
Oh, okay.
And
cool.
A very primitive weapon, late season elk hunt. My son is a huge waterfowl hunter, which I will never understand that. We won't even go down that rabbit hole on this podcast. We don't have enough time. But you bird hunters, I don't understand your logic in that. But he's a huge bird hunter. He loves waterfowl more than anything. So he chose a shotgun. He wanted to shoot this elk with a shotgun, and we
were you like? So, did you look at him and go like, "What the hell?"
You know, I did. We have muzzleloaders, you know, so they had to be open sight. You couldn't have a scope on them. It had to be primitive weapon. But I, out of every weapon possible, I would have done archery. I would have picked the shotgun last. That's for sure. I mean, no doubt in my mind. He said, that's what I want. And knowing, I mean, he fully knew that was probably one of the most challenging ones to pick.
Yeah, for sure.
Picked it. We got prepared with it. Went out. Like I said, it was a tough, tough hunt with just seeing hardly any elk at all.
How far,
to no elk.
Before, when you were talking about prepared for it, how far can you, were you guys able to shoot with that thing?
He was really good in the vital area at about 100 yards.
Okay.
I mean, once, and that's if a dead rest, I mean, perfect scenario,
yeah.
Perfect, you know, open sight, 100 yards, we felt very confident in an ethical shot on
dang,
the
dang, that's farther than I expected. I just, you know,
it,
never,
it, same here.
Yeah, I never messed
yeah,
with a
I,
shotgun.
I was, me neither. I hadn't even thought about shooting slugs or shotgun.
I don't know, Lance the Duck Hunter sounds pretty good. It's a nice ring.
It's never going to happen, man. not in my lifetime. So we were able to get in on a bull. We found a bull one night. We were able to get in on him the next morning. and it was blowing a snowstorm in, so we had a really constant steady wind. This bull fed to us to 7 yards. So he shot this bull, shot him. He was shooting an old Remington 870 pump action shotgun with a 300 grain Hornady slug in it. And he shot 3 shots right in the shoulder of a bull at 7 yards. He had never been that close to a bull before, nothing. Just a beautiful bull he killed. And I think one of the reasons for that, I've been putting him in the state of Utah now for 26 years for elk, and I've never drawn a bull elk tag. So he drew this tag. He killed it. That's a bigger bull than I've ever killed. I've killed a couple bulls on open bull, Matt. So, and just to be able to even tell him that, like, hey, man, you just did something that I've never done.
Yeah.
You killed a bigger bull than your old man has ever done in his life. And that was rewarding to him.
Absolutely.
He was so proud of himself that moment, you know, got to help him and watch him. He's been on many deer hunts with me, and we broke down deer and packed them out. But, you know, you get up on a bull elk, that's just a different
yeah,
animal.
Yeah, you're like, great.
what did we just do?
Yep.
But we got to share that moment together, that day, the whole weekend camping, the whole week of camping. That was top five in my list of my whole life right there.
I pulled up the picture of your son next to his elk on your Instagram. And I mean, one, yes, it's a very big bull, but what a beautiful bull too. I mean, looks so symmetrical and just, man.
And that's what's cool about it too. We said from the start, our expectations weren't to kill a 400 bull. We would love to. But he said the whole time, Dad, if I can just find a really, really pretty, perfect 6-point bull. And that's exactly what this outfit he got to kill was. So he killed his dream bull, and it was just, there's nothing better. I'm sure you know this with your kids. Yeah. I would rather have my children harvest than kill an animal now in my life and see the happiness on their face than me pull the trigger any day.
Yeah. I actually, my son, he's obviously younger than yours. He's 11, but he shot his first turkey this year. And that was just so cool to be there and be part of, you know,
nothing better.
Yep. You know, I'm not sure, you know, kind of moving forward on some hunts that you've done. I'm not sure when you guys, you and Mike went on your barren ground or barren land, caribou. I'm not sure. I don't remember. One of the two. When y'all went on that, how long ago was that you guys went on that hunt?
That was in August of this year, just a few months ago.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So kind of, because obviously I was the one that got the joys of editing that short clip that I'm sure you saw. So why don't you kind of break down that hunt and then we'll get into, you know, kind of the finale and what happened.
Yeah. Cool opportunity. We were actually supposed to go on this hunt. My two buddies, both of my buddies named Mike and Mike, we had planned this hunt for last year.
Okay.
To go August of last year. And it was it was only like a few weeks before we were supposed to leave. I was actually coming out of the canyon where I live here in southern Utah. My son actually drew a bear tag that year, and we had been up baiting and come out of the canyon, got into service. And I had a text from my buddy Mike that the trip was canceled because of snow in August up there where we were going. They had snowed some other hunters in the backcountry. They were unable to get them out, and our hunt was canceled until next year, which is the current year we're in now. So it was a long anticipated hunt. I mean, it just, my dream was to hunt caribou. I was able to put it together with Mike and all of his connections. And so we decided to all go up and do it together. We had another buddy, Tommy from Colorado. Our other buddy went with us. So it was a 4-man trip. We set out end of August, flew into Kotzebue, Alaska. And then we just kind of, it's kind of a do it yourself. They drop you back into the backcountry and you're back there and set up camp and you're on your own at that point. amazing. I've done it a couple. This is my first time with caribou. I've done it a couple other times on Kodiak Island for blacktail and stuff like that. But this was my first caribou experience. Totally different where we went. We were way up in the Arctic, of Alaska. So it was, and once again, end of August, it snowed on us 2, 3, 4 days up there, locked in for a couple days of fog because you're right by the coast. And so the fog bank comes in, and on those stormy days, it doesn't leave. But man, this trip, we saw way more bear than we did caribou. There were up there, there were the Arctic grizzly, is what they are. And we saw more bears than we did caribou. The caribou just weren't migrating through where we were at. We were still seeing plenty of caribou, but we were seeing bears everywhere. And, oh, it was probably the fourth or fifth day, I'm thinking it was. I don't know the days exactly. I finally spotted this shooter bull. He was probably a couple miles from camp. Storm is getting ready to blow in. To be honest with you, we probably should not have left camp under the circumstances that we did to go after this bull. But it was one of those like, oh, shooter bull, finally a big shooter bull. Let's go.
Right. Heck yeah.
So me and a buddy, we took off after it. And luckily enough, anybody that's hunted caribou know them dang things, they don't sit still. All they do is move. They just go, 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 go. And luckily we took off. We got to a point we could see him. The bull I ended up shooting and his two buddies, they ended up bedding down. They bed down, which gave us the opportunity to get close enough and make a stalk. It was a long stalk. I mean, we're talking several hours by the time we left camp to got into shooting position. That tundra up there stuff is just the most miserable stuff you can ever walk in your life. Snow and rain and wind blowing. We got within, I think we got about, it was just under 700 yards, if I remember right. We got there, but then we were out of cover. It was wide open, nothing but the big main river flowing through the bottom of it. We were on one side with a good elevation. The bull was on the other. They got up and started moving. So we got a range. I dialed in my gun, got it dialed onto him, and got a couple shots in him. We won't talk about how many I missed. We'll just talk about the but not everybody listening hasn't. You have. We'll just talk about the two that I hit. The crosswind was horrendous, and being, I shouldn't say an unexperienced hunter because I'm not. I'm very experienced, but I made some very unexperienced type mistakes where we were not taking into account the crosswind. We couldn't see where I was hitting. But anyways, I got a couple shots into this bull. He bedded down. So we at that time, we decided, hey, he's not going anywhere. He's hurt. He's hit hard. Let's gather all our pack up and get over and get closer to him. So that's exactly what we did. We got down into the river, got up the other side of the river, and started gaining a little bit of elevation to where we could see the bull. We could see him, just his head laying there in the grass. And that's in the video you edited. That's when that video pretty much starts right there after my shooting is we're 62 yards from this bull. I say to Mike, hey, get the camera out. Let's start filming. I'm going to get this bull to stand up and finish him off right here. So he does. He gets the camera rolling, says, hey, I'm ready. I just bend over, get my gun off my shoulder. I chamber around in and look up and we look up and 60 yards away, up over the little rise comes a big old Arctic grizz. And as you, I say, oh, bear, bear, big bear. At the time, the bear didn't, he wasn't focused, the caribou was laying down. He really wasn't focused on the caribou. He was just roaming, doing what bears do. You know, he was just out roaming the area. And he walked closer. He got probably within about 40 yards of that of my bull. And at that time, the bull picked up its head. And instantly when he picked up his head, that grizzly just focused in and honed right in on that caribou.
Jeez.
And then it all happened. Oh, it was intense, and it all happened so quick after that. You know, the caribou seen the bear seen the caribou jumps up.
He's like, fuck! Tries
to, yeah, he was. He's like, well, game over. And one of my shots had shot him and blown out his back leg. So okay. He's running on three legs, trying to run in that tundra. And so he took off, and you can kind of see the bear at first. He just kind of loping towards the caribou. And then you can see he knows, oh, I can get this. And then he just turns on the jets and goes right at this bull, gets right behind it. The bull turns around and puts his horns down to try to defend himself. And the Arctic Grizz just jumps right up on him and takes him down right there at 60 yards away from us. Takes him down, finishes him off, and just sits there and proceeds to eat my dream caribou. It was, at the moment, it was the most, I mean, it was, you can't even explain where your emotions are at. I mean, your adrenaline is going a million miles an hour, especially us guys from the lower 48 that don't experience grizzlies, right? I mean, this is happening 60 yards away. This Arctic Grizz just took down a caribou. He's sitting there killing it, eating it. We don't know what we know. We can't shoot it. We know we can't do nothing at that time. We know we're here for the show now. I mean, that's all you can do. As he's doing that, we look up and about 150 yards away, another bear is running straight towards this area. So we decided at that point, hey, we need to stop filming, stop everything. Let's back up and get up on the riverbank, which puts us at about 150 yards away. Out of if anything goes on between the other two bears, a fight or anything, it kind of puts us in the safe where we felt safe anyways. And that's just what we did. We backed up to there and we filmed it and enjoyed the show for a while.
Dang.
For a long while, actually. And So that was the day of the hunt. That's how that transpired.
That's wild. So when he hit that caribou at, you know, 62 yards, which is plenty close. What could you hear, you know, like when he broke the thing's neck and stuff, like, could you hear all that?
No, we could not. It was
so windy.
The storm was rolling in right on top of us. It was so windy. We couldn't hear nothing. It was all, complete visual.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cause I mean, the footage is wild. For anyone that wants to see this, Lance shoots this caribou and then they're walking towards it and the bear comes in that clip. There's an edited version. It's like, I don't know, 2 minutes long or something. It's on Pro Membership Sweepstakes YouTube channel. And it's pretty wicked to see.
It definitely is. It's worth the watch for sure.
Yeah, I'll link to that in the show notes. Here you are, you're 60 yards away from your dream caribou, and you said, you know, the adrenaline's just pumping. But what kind of things are running through your mind? Are you thinking, like, I'm next? Or are you thinking, well, thank God he's got my caribou because he's not going to come over here and eat us? Like, what's going through your mind?
Yeah, he, you know, never felt threatened at all. Really didn't. Especially, you could tell the second he took down that bull and he had it. We started yelling a few times, hey, bear, hey, trying to think. Looking back, it's pretty comical thinking we could run him off, like yell at him. But it was not happening. That he had his meal and he was sitting right on it. So, no, we never felt dangered at all. The only thing that was going on in my head is, I mean, this is something I've dreamed about my whole life, is to go on a caribou hunt. And right. I always said, I want a full velvet bull. I want it to have the gray, white cape. I mean, this bull was everything I had ever dreamed of. And, you know, walking over there, your excitement's up. I'm thinking about the mount I'm going to do for it. It'll be on my wall forever. You know, all the things we do. And it was just taken away at the snap of a finger. And so I was pissed off. I was sad. There was
everything.
So many emotions. Yeah, it was at the time, it wasn't like, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
Like, that is amazing. We just got to experience this. I mean, we're just like panic mode. What do? We have our in reaches with us, you know, which is the only form of communication there.
Yeah.
We start in reaching, my buddy Mike, he's back at camp. He's very veteran to all this, hunts Alaska all the time. We messaged back, kind of was telling him what to do. And it was, now looking at it, I laugh at the message he sent back. That's exactly what he said. He says, "It's his now. Enjoy the show." You know, and at the time I'm like, the hell with this. I'm going to shoot this damn thing. He's, you know, I'm thinking in my mind, like, no, don't. He's eating my dream.
Yeah.
But he was exactly right. That's all there was to do was sit there and enjoy the show.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, you guys, in the clip, you went back the next day. Obviously he had it completely, or next 2 days. I'm not sure if it was the exact next day, but you went back and, the bear had everything cleaned up. I thought it was pretty impressive how cleaned up the bear had it. Like, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was insane. So it was actually 6 days.
Okay. Later. 6 days.
Yeah, so when we hiked back to camp, and not from exactly camp, but about 200 yard rise up above camp, we had a really good glassing spot. That's where we went pretty much every morning, almost had a 360 degree panorama of the country to see whatever. You could look down in the valley and you could see right where the caribou was and where the bear was. And so that was obviously the first thing we did every morning. And evening was look, and sure enough, the bear he did not leave the site. He stayed right on it. He buried it, and he would just lay there and sleep on it all day long. I mean, he wouldn't leave. He didn't leave, go 10 feet away from his kill for 6 days. And it was actually the day. Yeah, it was. And so as those days went on, it got more and more real to me that I was not even going to get to take my antlers home.
Right.
It was just, I was just out. We weren't going to kill nothing else. And I was going home empty handed on, you know, a guy like me, I don't make enough money to do this trip every year for sure.
Right. And they're not cheap.
But they're not cheap. And even with good connections like I have, they're not cheap. You definitely, you know, make a sacrifice money wise to do so. So the more days went on and he never left it got very, more and more surreal and devastating and upsetting, until the day we were to fly out. We hiked up there to that little spot, set up the spotting scope, and he was not there. And we're like, no way. So we yelled back down to camp to Mike and said, he's gone. Get up here. So we all sat down with our glass and just looked at the entire area to make sure he hadn't just went down to the river to get a drink, make sure he just wasn't laying somewhere different. We spent about an hour, hour and a half glassing, and we couldn't locate the bear anywhere. He was gone. So we were to be scheduled to be picked up by our plane in about 2 hours at that time, which was definitely not time to go down and get it. It was a long, long walk down and back before. So we were able to, Mike was able to in reach our pilot. And as I said, we had been snowed in for a couple days. So there was other hunters in the backcountry areas that needed to be picked up, and they were wanting to get home pretty bad. So we said, hey, go pick them up, pick us up tonight.
Okay.
He said, absolutely. That's great. Cause they were wanting to get out. We're not wanting to get out. So it worked really good for our pilot too. So he did that, and the two Mikes and myself, we packed up for a long, long hike down to the bull. We got to the riverbank, which is just like I said, the riverbank itself is about, 100 and 150 yards from the bull. We sat there for quite a long time talking really loud. That's part of the video that you edited when Mike is telling the story about the situation.
Yep.
We're sitting there just making sure the bear's gone, making sure he's not hit up there. And if he is in the area, he knows we're here now. So he don't surprise us or we don't surprise him, you know, just trying to make sure it's as safe as possible. And we sat there for a while. He doesn't show up. And so we go in, we walk shoulder to shoulder, prepared to, you know, defend ourselves if we have to. Hopefully not. Hopefully we can run this bear off. We feel like even if he is there, he's probably full enough now that we could flush him from the kill.
Right, right.
So we make the 150 yard hike into the bull. He's kind of buried in a little area there. I mean, there's nothing left of him, as you can see in the video. There's the kind of the skull. He pretty much chewed it all up, and about a 3.5 foot section of spine left. I pull that up while they're watching guard, making sure he doesn't come. I go grab it, and I took a saw with me, and I sawed that rest of that spine off, and then we hurry and got out and got back to the river, up on the bank of the river again, where it's a safe distance from it. And at that moment, it kind of finally sunk in, like, hey, we're safe, and I'm taking home my antlers.
So yeah.
It became pretty real right then. We still had a long hike back to camp. Did that. Took quite a few pictures at that point in time.
Yeah.
And we got him back to camp. Got camp picked up in time and got the plane landed in. And I was able to bring him home, and he's here now. And so, you know, at the moment, as I tell the story to everyone, at the moment, I was so furious, upset, like we said, all the emotions. But looking back on it now, I would not change what happened for him.
Right.
You know, it was an experience of a lifetime. I got to bring home the antlers, which was super cool and meant a lot to me. I know that's not, everybody says that's not why you do it. You don't do it, but I call BS on that when I go up there to kill something and bring something home.
Right.
I got to do it, but I got to bring home.
Don't get me started on that topic.
Yeah, right. Yeah, don't even. I'm just, you know me, I'm a straight shooter. I go up there to kill.
Oh, dude, somebody tells me they're like, yeah, I don't enjoy killing. And I'm like, and you hunt 6 different states?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, right.
Anywho, okay, continue your story.
Yeah. So, you know, now I wouldn't trade for anything.
Yeah.
Got the story to tell, got the antlers here. Am I going to have my beautiful velvet caribou on the wall? No, I'm not. He destroyed it. I mean, he didn't destroy the antlers much. He nibbled on a few of the tips, but the antlers are all intact. Ripped most of the velvet off. But that's actually how I'm going to recreate the mount. I'm going to do a pack mount. You know, they're getting pretty famous nowadays to put on a pack.
What you're going to have to do, Lance, you're just going to have to go back there and shoot a grizz somewhere and then just mount that grizz eating that caribou.
So many people said that exact thing.
I'm sure the problem with that is
to an outer, a non-resident, you must have a guide to hunt bear in Alaska, bear.
That's true. Yep.
And I'm not the kind that's going to ever could pay for a guide, or would I ever pay for a guide. So
right.
Not going to be able to do that. I'm just going to recreate the bloody horns. I'm going to have my taxidermist do the horn. You know, I took a ton of pictures. So we'll put velvet back on where the velvet was, have the blood the way it was. I'm going to put it on a pack just like it was when I was packing it back to camp, and recreate that on the wall with kind of pictures of the bear and the scenario all around it, and it'll be a story I'll tell a million times in my life, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very, very interesting and intriguing story. As far as, you know, the hunt and the trip goes, what would you say was the biggest challenge that trip posed?
You know, it's a mental challenge. The time I was on Kodiak, it was the same way. And this, especially the days that a storm comes in and you're stormed in and you're locked in your tent. You know, you can't leave your tent because of the weather. It's cold. You're surviving on dehydrated food, you know, which is nowadays is pretty good actually.
Right.
They got some really good meals and stuff, but it's just a mental challenge. You have to keep the mind, your mentality, you've got to remain positive. It can eat you up in a hurry. Because when your mind is idle like that, it wants to stray down what could happen, the negatives, So mentally, I think more than anything, I mean, it's physically challenging. Don't get me wrong. Anytime you go up there, it's a physical beast. There's no doubt. But for me, it's the mental part of just keeping your mind. And a lot of it is the people around you. You know, the people you have at camp, your hunting partners, who's with you. You got a good group. Like this trip, there wasn't a whole lot of challenging mentally at all. We had such a good time. We had a really good camp set up. We had three tents set up. We had each of our sleeping tent, two people in each tent. And then in the center, we kind of had what we call, you know, your little cook tent.
Yep.
Not really a cook tent like you do on hunts we know of here. It's still just a small little tent, backpacking tent in there. But we'd gather in there and stay warm as much as you can and stay hydrated, drink a lot of instant coffee and stuff like that while you're out there. So
yeah,
that's pretty much it. You know, the mental aspect of it is, it could be very challenging for sure.
Yeah. I've heard the same thing. You know, I've never personally been yet. But I've heard that similar story, just being there and there is where you are, you know, it's not like you can just, I'm going to tough it out and I'm going to walk 30 miles to the vehicle.
It's very true. You're out there and you're on your own. You're there. Yeah. This one wasn't as bad, I wouldn't say, as like my Kodiak adventure. And the main reason is this time of year, it was light most of the time. I mean, it was dark only a few hours.
Gotcha.
When I go to Kodiak, I go in November. So it's only light for a few hours and dark most of the time. And so when you're sitting in your little tent for three quarters of a day because of the darkness, that one's very mental. But this one wasn't the where it was stayed light like that most of the time. And on the days that we did have weather, I mean, you can hunt a lot of hours in the day and just, you know, sit there in glass. And this was a heck of a trip. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. It sounds like it. As far as like pieces of gear, well, two things. One, obviously there's bears around. So when you guys do like a cook tent, is it, you know, because in Wyoming, there's a place you can hunt where the grizzlies are bad. I mean, like, dude, there's days we'll see 11 to 20 grizzlies. Like, it is a lot.
Yeah.
And so are you, you know, when you do a cook tent there, is it kind of this, like, you do it quite a ways away from your sleep tents and that's where all your food stays and everything like that? Or do you guys not really mess with that?
You know, it wasn't this, it was actually right close to our other tents. But cook tenting in Alaska in the backcountry, you are eating nothing but dehydrated food.
Gotcha.
Because of you're so light on what you can pack in. Not only weight wise, but size wise, you know, you're going in on these little planes, you can't pack much. So it's not like you're packing. I mean, if we, the whole plan, the whole time we were there, we took an onion with us for sure, because we were like, man, onion and butter. When we kill a caribou, we're going to eat back straps. Right. Well, that didn't happen. So the smell, things like that. I couldn't answer that for you, because the trips I've been on to Alaska, both of them, you have lived strictly 100% on Mountain House or Peak dehydrated food, you know, and you just zip the pouch back up, secure it, and there's not much sand or smell there at all to attract the bears.
Gotcha. So. Gotcha. Cool. So the other question that I had was, you know, with your time there, what one or two, or maybe it's three, I don't know, pieces of gear where you were like, I am so freaking glad I brought this?
Well, the gear you wear more, I mean, that's the obvious answer, right? Having good quality gear that you wear, especially rain gear in Alaska. You've got rain gear and puffies. If you're going to take two pieces of clothing, you need to take puffies and rain gear for sure. But I'm telling you right now, trekking poles, hiking sticks, whatever you want to call them, they are an absolute must in Alaska. That is, especially in the tundra, it's the most difficult stuff you can ever walk in. You look out across there and you think it's just this flat land that you can just mob across. You can't. It's it's difficult, and you're twisting ankles and ending up on your knees and stuff more than you know. So you have to have trekking poles. I mean, that's an absolute must piece of gear. I mean, like I said, you always know gear to wear, right? You're going to gear up, layer up. Everybody knows that. You do a ton of research for that, but definitely a trekking pole. Yeah, that's an absolute must. And then you go up there to the big, big country of Alaska, your optics are essential. You've got to have your tripod and really good optics to do all the work. You can't hike around and do everything. Your eyes have to do 99% of the work on a hunt like this.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, Lance, I've had true to every time we're around each other, you know, from meeting, you know, on our first time we ever met to just catching up and grabbing lunch together. And now the podcast, sure. I have a blast every time I get to interact with you. So I appreciate you taking the time out this evening to hop on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. When you called me the other day, like I said, it was an honor.
Yeah.
Get on and anytime we get together, it's a riot for sure.
Yeah. All right, Lance. Well, thanks again, man. I appreciate it a ton.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Zach.